lead the session.
Oh my. First of all, it's a pleasure to be with you. And some of you will want to sit. That's an hour is a long time to stand. Is there a way for us to help that?
We're over capacity, so we cannot have any more chairs.
Okay. All right. Many of us come to trafficking through various venues, various avenues that bring us to this place, either to this conference or to this place in our life. Mine happened rather circuitously. My faith community would be about Jesus, and Jesus definitely leads in sort of out-of-the-box ways, and you're going to see a lot of that today. My out-of-the-box way, after 36 years in education as a teacher and a principal, my husband and I moved to Bangkok, Thailand. His vision was set. His ministry was set. He'd been going in and out of Southeast Asia for about 20 years. I didn't know what I was going to be to do in Thailand. I knew I could hold babies at orphanages, and there's lots of those. I had practiced that earlier in my life, in my career. I knew I could teach English because I could teach a little, practice that quite a bit. I wasn't sure where God was going to lead me, and when we arrived and landed in the international part of Bangkok, I was struck by the in-your-face sex industry that is there. And my journey began actually with shame and embarrassment, that my countrymen, the men in America, the men in Australia, in Europe, were exploiting and using these beautiful women that I was beginning to know. So it was through shame, actually, that I was brought to a place of working with the girls who left, were willing to leave the sex industry. The sex industry and trafficking are inextricably linked. Not every girl who lives at Home of New Beginnings was trafficked, though many of them were. The girls in the sex industry there are not handcuffed to their beds by literal handcuffs, but they are handcuffed by poverty. With that in mind, I want you to understand that anything that you do for the poor globally is helping trafficking, because poverty is the backbone, is the backdrop against any of the trafficking victims that you will ever know or hear about. A friend of mine said, people want to break down the door of a brothel and drag those girls out. And I say to them, are you willing to dig a well? Because if they have clean water out in their villages, if they have a school in their villages, if they have support in their villages, they're not going to end up in a place where we have to break a door down. So anything about poverty is about trafficking. And I want us to have a much larger picture because it's in that large picture that we're going to solve some of the issues around trafficking. So these are the confessions of a retiree. I retired from education and was shamed into doing something about the girls that were trapped in the sex industry, trapped by poverty, and then some that were absolutely trafficked either by families or were pimped by their husbands or boyfriends. Not pimped as we know here so much in the States. They don't have usually a cadre of women. It's usually a boyfriend or a husband who are pimping them, and it's usually to support their gambling habits. I do have a handout, and I'm going to ask my helpers to pass them out. While my journey started with shame. It the second step toward this, after this passion breaks in your heart, in whatever way that breaks, there are next steps. And but first it begins with a desire to serve. Is there something I really want to do? What is logical for me to do? There are a lot of questions we need to ask ourselves. And we're going to give you some examples today of people that have taken action. My journey started at age 59, and I've been at it 6 years, I'm telling, aren't I? It's okay. So my journey, I was a little late to this game. They've referred to that a bit, being late to the game. Well, yes, I'm a little late to the game in life, but here we are. As a retiree, I'm finding myself moving to Thailand 6 years ago and thinking, oh, what is going on? But clearly the path was open. It was what Dr. Batstone was talking about. I think it was him that said taking one step and then you just keep going and tripping forward. And that's exactly what I did. I tripped forward. And the first year that we opened Home of New Beginnings, by some very circuitous route, it might have been God, a young woman came to intern with us for about 5 weeks. We only had four girls in the home at the time. We currently have 15. Let me say just a minute about that. Our focus is on education. There's great emphasis on creating business in those settings internationally. And all of that's wonderful. My background is not business. My background is education, and I believe that God was going to use that in some way. So currently, most of the girls that are in the sex industry and are trafficked, one little gal that we have in our home is 12, and she was sold by an auntie. And she had never been to school. So education is missing for most of these girls. Poverty is part of it. Lack of education is part of it. So my antenna goes up at the lack of education piece, and I say, I can do something about education, or I know the importance of that at least. So in that context, our focus is actually on creating family, and in that family, emphasizing education. Most of the girls who come to us have less than ninth grade education, many of them a grade six or a grade nine, some of them without any at all. We currently have three girls in university because I'm not satisfied with grade 12, and three of our girls in university, one in textile design, one in marketing and business, and the other one in chemical engineering. She's a little past my league, but we love her anyway. She scares me to death. But so it's all very possible, and it's all it's the way I think. For my background and my experience, I can help these girls understand their need for education and break that generational cycle of poverty. If we can get them educated, Half the Sky, the book Half the Sky, will talk a lot about this if you haven't gotten that book. If we can educate them, we can break that cycle of poverty, and these girls then will be able to support their own children to go to school, to go to university as well. Many of the women that we have in our program, their mothers were also prostituted as well. So we're there to break some cycles. I also need to say this to you because I sometimes forget. I want us to be real clear that whatever you do in the name of trafficking issues, you will get back far more than you ever give, no matter what you give. I have learned much more about my faith in this Buddhist community. Most of our girls have learned of my faith. I know much more about God's redemptive power than I ever knew before. I would never probably have been labeled self-centered in the context of the West. I know nothing about self-sacrifice compared to these girls, and they have become true models for me in my own spiritual journey as well. And just be clear that when God says he's anointed us to preach good news to the poor and free the captive, he's saying that partly because of what it will do for us, not just what we can do for them. So put that on the umbrella over this whole piece. So once you have a passion, once you have are pricked with a conscience, I'm going to tell you a little bit story because I was 58 when we moved to Thailand, 59. This 18-year-old who came as an intern that I started to talk about a minute ago, she was 18 years old, so moved by what she saw in the bars and the relationships with the girls in the house. She was a student at Liberty, a sophomore, 18 years old. I'm 58. Where was I at 18? she said, I think I've got it, Benita. I think I've got it. You too? How can you have it at 18? I don't have it, and I'm 58. And but she came home, and she said, she took her babysitting money, get that one, babysitting money, and bought an MP3 player, and went to her class, one of her classes at Liberty, and said to the design class, this is the prize for the winning logo for a nonprofit that I'm establishing. And her nonprofit is called Freedom 424. And in the sex industry in Thailand, for about between $20 and $30, you can buy this girl for the evening out of the bar. So if I'm a customer, if I'm a John, I go into the bar. They wear buttons with numbers on them, dehumanized, objectified, don't even know their name. The man can say, I'll take number 36. She comes out of the bar because the man pays what's called a bar fine. So that's the privilege of having her for the evening. And then she negotiates the price for sex herself. So that's the process. The young woman said, for $24, you can buy a girl for 24 hours and maybe a lifetime. So her nonprofit became Freedom 424. And she gave the MP3 player as that was her total investment, personal money investment into this nonprofit. It then grew to be include Run for Their Lives, which was a 10K, 5K run. And they now currently are supporting Beginnings and another organization as well with money to buy girls out of the bars to expose them to a different process and a different options. This is an 18-year-old, Freedom 424, just like that. It was her path, her plan. Freedom 424 has grown and now has chapters. They have kits that if you want to start a Freedom 424 in your area, you email them and they'll send you all of the trappings to do a Run for Their Lives in your area. So if there are athletes out there and that strikes your fancy, then that's one possibility. They also now have chapters on other campuses and have started campus clubs called Freedom 424, supporting multiple organizations. So here we are at 58 and at 18, maybe it's this way, using gifts, coming to this place in a different way. And at any age, in any circumstance, and a wide variety of possibilities, and we're going to talk about that variety. But the first thing after you have that passion, after you have that that prick of your consciousness, the thing that brought you to this conference. Some of you are down the road with research, but if you're not, then I recommend that you do that. In my process of being shamed by seeing my countrymen with these women, it took another year and 3 months before we opened the home. A lot of research took place in the process. For some, it'll mean reading a book. For others, it'll take a lot longer, depending on how you're being led in this thing. But research is very important. And where is that research? Is your gifting toward law and law enforcement and legal aid and advocacy? Is it in the medical field? Do you need to contact individuals that are working in the medical field and see what they have to say? Are you in the medical field? Are you a teacher? Don't even have that on here. Shame on me. Are you in education? Are there ways in which you need to look with a different lens at some of the students around you and at the possibility of those students? And then when you're actually on the ground working with survivors or with victims, are you interested in prevention? Are you interested in rescue? Are you interested in recovery or aftercare? Make some choices in that area. It's overwhelming. You cannot do or be an expert in all of these fields. So do your research, think, process, consider what is appropriate for you to do. And then if you're examining organizations, I just want to say a little bit about this, and some of the questions are on there, so I'm not going to go through them, but let me give you one experience, and I'm now talking internationally, but it would be true at least at some level locally as well. And if you get behind an international organization, it's real important that you do some vetting of that organization. A friend of mine, a lawyer friend of mine from New Zealand, was hired by the UN to write protocol for a particular Southeast Asian nation, which shall remain unnamed. And her task was to visit over 200. There were 283 organizations in this country that said they were working with trafficking in some way. She visited 180 of them, and of those 180, probably only 15 of them were doing something that was, she would have viewed as significant in the area of recovery or aftercare, because she was writing protocol for aftercare. It's really important that you examine international organizations. Trafficking right now is becoming, it's becoming popular.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't mean to offend anyone by that. But I don't want it to be so popular that you don't do your homework in examining what's happening as a result of it. There's grant money available, and many organizations are tagging on the word trafficking to what they've always been doing, and they truly aren't doing a lot. And I'm talking mostly internationally because that's what I know more than the local piece. But regardless, be responsible with what you're about to give your energy to and what you're about to do. And all of those questions, they don't need to all have what you would consider the right answer. They're just information questions. Some of you would not be involved in anything if it wasn't faith-based. But there are a lot of not faith-based organizations that are all that are doing some great work. So figure out for yourself what those answers that you need to hear are there. Maybe there's a good reason. Let me give you an example. We partner with the Soul Project in Thailand. They're in Chiang Rai, and they are not faith-based. However, everyone that they hire is their faith community is all follows Jesus, but one of their platforms is to get on university campuses to advocate for the issue of trafficking, and if they were a faith-based, they would not be allowed on most university campuses. Does that make sense? So there's some good reasons why organizations are not faith-based. So do your homework. That's all that means. Tara, do you want to share just a minute about, you don't need to mention the country either, but you found some problems with organizations as well. Does that make sense?
Hi, I'm Tara Shatsky. And
Hello, I'm Tara Shatsky, and a friend of Bonita's here. And what she's referring to is that I went in for a relief trip to another country, and while we were there, we found that there was an orphanage, supposedly, that was set up and had a website and so forth that to take care of kids. And kids, they found out that this was a trafficker who had set up an orphanage and had children going through, and but with the website and with everything that there was set up in place, it was local people running a healthy, real orphanage that just said, no more, we're going to stop this. And so they did stop it. But definitely that is something that you just need to be aware and do your research, like Bonita's saying, and because that's it's out there. So.
Thank you. Then I want to get to the real action items here. I divided them into time, talent, and treasure. That's a Buford saying. I want to give him credit for that. I didn't think of that all by myself. Our lives are made up of those three things. We have time, we have talent, we have treasures, and some of us have more of one thing than the other. In fact, some of us have very limited of some of those things than the other, but we all have something in that list that we can give and we can do. But you need to be, you need to reflect on how much time, how much talent, and how much treasure you can commit to this. And we're going to get to those reflection questions later. But some of the time issues that I have listed there are, they overlap. You can't organize a fundraiser without spending a whole bunch of time and without probably using some talent as well. So these aren't clear definitions here. But do you have time to go to another country, or do you have time to go to some of the local organizations and volunteer with survivors, or go to the do research in law enforcement? What kind of time do you have to give to those pieces? What kind of time do you have? Maybe your talent is speaking, which is not particularly mine. I'm here, but maybe you can do that in a cogent way. If you have that talent, is your mission then to look at the people of influence, or the people in your area of influence, your work organizations, your community organizations, your service groups, Kiwanis, some of the service groups that are around. Do you have a book club? Do you have a women's Bible study? Do you have a, what are those areas? Do you have a community that, a homeowners association? Think about all the possibilities of organizations that are already around, or groups that are already around, that you have the possibility of bringing this issue to. You're here because you already know a little bit. Maybe you're brand new into this. all of us are pretty brand new into it, frankly, but you have an area of influence. It always amazes me when I'm sharing about beginnings, the number of people that have not truly heard anything about this. So if perhaps what you can do is simply give an evening to an exposure evening so people are aware, build awareness around your community and around in your area of influence. Advocating for survivors, writing protocol, reading books. A friend of mine took one of the books from the Resource Center that are there. They've actually done Half the Sky and Not for Sale. And she has a group of five women that meet regularly in a book club. And that's her way of giving back, was to simply, she's a very busy mom, soccer teams, all of the above, but she could give back by exposing those five women to the issues of trafficking by going through her book club to do it. And then talent. One of the gals who has interned at Beginnings did some composition, musical composition, has made a CD, and all the downloads of that CD are brought into a fund, and that fund supports Beginnings and one other organization. Photography, we need videographers on the field. We need people who are expressing that talent in a way to expose others to the truth of it all. as an organization, was talking this morning with some people who do photography, and phototherapy is a potential there with survivors. Do some research about that and use your photography in that particular way. Design, business, let me tell you a little, even gardening. A friend of mine that I met in Washington, D.C., my husband is very involved in the National Prayer Breakfast. It happens at the first week in February. And we were at the International Luncheon a couple of years ago, right after we opened Beginnings. And I met her. She was sitting right there at the table with me. We chatted, struck up a relationship, emailed a few times. And she became very concerned about the whole issue of trafficking and especially the sex industry in Bangkok. And she said, but all I do is garden. And she's in her, she's probably close to 70. She said, all I do is garden. And I said, send me pictures. I just want to see what you're doing. But then she figured out that she could have an open garden day in her backyard, invite friends and community members, have a master gardener there, and have lemonade and cookies and invite people to enjoy her garden. She has a brochure there, and that's all she does. And then they donate to a cause. That cause happens to be us, but she's going to have to broaden that. She raised $5,000 for us just by having people walk through her garden. I'm going to take up gardening. I'm going to ask Tara to come and talk a little bit about what she did as a result of her experiences and exposure internationally.
So, hello, I'm Tara, like I mentioned, and I'm a mother of two sons, 26 and 27, so I've raised children. I'm a business owner, and I have a very, very strong passion to be a part of stopping, you know, trafficking. And none of those really go together, you know, they're just within me. And so when I first felt this passion to be a part of this cause, I thought, you know, like, I don't know, like many of you, I thought, what in the world am I supposed to do about this? I mean, I went through the whole list of what I'm not. And I am a follower of Jesus, and so I did read the scriptures, and there were so many people in the Bible that said the same thing. You know, ah, not me. Don't call me. I can't do this. You know, Moses even. And so I thought, okay, all right. So you've heard this before, God. So I guess I don't have any other excuse. So what I did was in 2004. I'm going to go back just a little bit. In 2004, the devastating tsunami hit Southeast Asia. And I sat and watched that on the television, and I remember sitting there, and that was the point of, you know, oh, gee, you know, what can I do about this? Well, okay, I'll send some money. But that was it. And then I continued to not be able to sit with that, and I had already felt that God was leading me in the direction of missions. I didn't necessarily think it would be relief work and in that kind of situation, but 2 days after talking to the missions director of our church, I was on a plane to Sri Lanka and Thailand. And I had not been outside of my comfort zone before. So this was, I had been to Mexico and that was pretty much it. So I went in and said, doctor, shoot me up with whatever I need. I don't know, you know, malaria pills, whatever. And so I left. And what I found was this was the start of my journey towards seeing the trafficking industry and seeing what's out there. It was so apparent in Sri Lanka and Thailand what was going on. You couldn't avoid it. Like Bonita said when she showed up in Thailand, it's just in your face. And it broke my heart. And so when I returned, not only having seen the devastation of a tsunami that hit a country and, you know, hundreds of thousands of people died, but I also saw trafficking for the first time and sex slavery. So I came home and was downloading all this and started reading. Just started reading about the subject, as Bonita said, researching and just saying, okay, I've got to dig into this and really find out what's going on. And one of the books I read that was not on trafficking, but it's a Bill Hybels book, Willow Creek pastor, called Holy Discontent. And I don't know if anyone's read that, but when I read that, I said, wow, this is me. I feel angry, yet justified in my anger, you know, but I'm really angry inside, and I'm having trouble sleeping. And so when I was reading this book, it said in there, he said, you know, what's your Popeye moment? I was like, Popeye moment. Some of you may not remember, but Popeye being the can of spinach, ripping the can of spinach off, and I can't, you know, stands it no more. I'm going to get in there and do something and stop this madness, you know. So I felt like, yeah, that's my moment. That's my Popeye moment. I came when I was in Bangkok and Thailand and saw what was going on. So here we are again with, okay, so what do I do with this? So what I ended up doing is I went back to Sri Lanka 9 more times and went to Thailand 4 additional times. Could not just stay away. It felt like home to me in a sense because I had really, my heart had bonded there. It had broken there and it had bonded there too. I met Bonita on my 3rd trip to Thailand. A friend connected us. And so I came in for the purpose to speak with her and find out and be educated through her experience and find out more about what they're doing. And we did the tour of Bangkok, or at least the parts that you don't get on the tour map, you know. So we did the backstreet brothel tours. And it was, again, even a wider view of what was really taking place. So from that point on, I said, all right, Lord, here's the deal. I'm going to give you all the reasons why I can't do this, but I do know that if you're asking me to step into this, and this is where you have me, then I'm willing, and that's what I'm going to do, and you're just going to have to figure it out. And so that's what I did. From that, what happened was I formed an organization called Children of Grace, and what I wanted to do was come alongside of people like Bonita, who are in the trenches day in, day out, dealing with the issues and dealing with the girls and the trauma and all that they're going through and helping to restore these individuals. I wanted to come alongside of her and others who I could help lift up and help, you know, say, what can I do? What can we do? as we gathered, you know, the army of people to help, what can we do to help fill in the gaps where, you know, you just feel, I just can't handle this one area. And so we, you know, got to know one another really well, and Roy also, and so from that I have formed Children of Grace. We have a Skype program that we put together. I have counselors and therapists and different people that have said, I'll volunteer my time to help on a Skype program, work with the house moms and people on how to, you know, deal with trauma and grief and all the types of things that that they're dealing with. So sort of training the trainers in that sense to help them, support them. And so that's been really cool to see people get involved with that too. What happened also, again, this was a 2-year period of time, and things, you know, I'm feeling really good about how things are going, and I feel like I'm in the right place where God wants me. But again, the no sleep, and I thought, all right, what's going on? And God's like, you know, but wait, there's more. You're going to be involved in something else. And what was troubling me was that when the restoration takes place and, you know, the girls are in a safe home and they're being cared for, there's still the need for the cycle of poverty to stop, you know, and for someone to help with getting them, their dreams to be fulfilled. And, you know, like Bonita said, I mean, she's got a home full of girls with wonderful dreams and aspirations. And so, you know, what I started recently, which is only 2 months ago, was a business vehicle called Finding Freedom. And what we do is it's a business vehicle to be able to bring financial resources for education and vocational training to these girls and for them to fulfill their dreams. So we've talked to Benita's girls, we've documented their dreams, and we've created certain things. So far we have jewelry right now, we have book bags, things like that. This is what we call our dream carrier. So inside this little capsule, you open it up, and it's a prayer box, and there's a young girl's dream that is written and put inside the capsule. So the reason for this is to not only have something that helps support the financial help, but to also to remind you to, you know, think about, pray for, support, tell the story about these girls that don't have the opportunities that we do to have their dreams fulfilled. So anyway, the other thing too is then to, with Finding Freedom, is that we want to have people bring their time and their talents to our business vehicle. So if anyone says, you know, I'm a painter and I'd love to be able to use my paintings for this, then they can talk with me and we can look at putting their paintings on our website and doing that too. So it's a way of gathering people together that can use their talents to provide. So anyway, that's it. Thanks. Oh, and the things are in the back. If you do want to take a look at them on the way out, I have a few I put back there. Thanks.
Businesswoman in her own right, she and God woke her up one night and said, come on, you're a businesswoman. Start a business. And that's, of course, what she did. There are 1,000 other examples. A friend of mine does not support beginnings. It's okay, I let her. But she's a fabulous painter in her own right. And Tara, she's not on Tara's website, but she's doing, she's contributing 1 or 2 paintings a year for the cause to another organization. I mentioned gardening. There's what is it that you do? What's natural for you? Where are you spending your time? That's what you need to examine and think about how you can tweak that into some kind of service toward trafficking victims. And that, in fact, is what Erin did. Erin is another friend of mine. Come forward. She has a new baby. Her time is maybe more limited than Tara's, I don't know. We'll see. But she's got her own story, her own journey from passion to action.
Hi. So the short story is that my friend started a jewelry company called Red Start Design, and she made this necklace called a New Beginnings Pendant, where all the proceeds go to the Home of New Beginnings. And the reason why, or the way that started, was that I had come to a place where I was extremely concerned about the issue. And I was also going through a troubling time in my life because I was going through the fourth in a series of miscarriages. And so I was talking to her about that, and then I said, but you know, I don't have it so bad. You think about what other people are going through, which is always a very good thing to do when you're down in the dumps, is to try to remember what other people are up against. And I told her about the Home of New Beginnings, and I said, you know what I would love to do? I would love to do a bracelet, and it would say, you know, no one is free when others are enslaved or when others are in chains. And I had all these kind of ideas, and I said, do you think that would be a good idea? And of course, she's a jeweler, and I'm not. So she said, yeah. And she kind of said, yeah, I think we should do that. And we're good friends. We were roommates in college and stuff, so we have a good relationship. But still, it was a little bit like a month later, so what do you think about the project? 2 months later, she said, you want to meet and I'll show you what I made? And I said, oh, I didn't even know you were even working on it, really. And she showed me a necklace, which was good. You know, I was going to take, it didn't have to be, you know, I think when you're starting something and you don't have really talent or the other things, you kind of have to be flexible. So, and so, sure, you know. But I liked the idea of it because it's shaped like a little egg. And so it symbolizes that whole newness of life and starting afresh and a new beginning. So I thought, that's actually perfect. And then it was another long period of time before we got to the point where we could actually find a venue to sell them at. And so we sold them at churches, thanks to Rosemary Nola, who's Global Missions at my church. And then at another church, thanks to the same connections. And so far, we've raised $700 and $800 after I sell that one to you, the pretty lady in the front row. And so it's still kind of small in comparison to what's needed. But at the same time, I'm hopeful that it will still continue to grow and we'll sell more. And I'm also thinking that one thing that I try to keep in mind, and maybe I'm just doing this to make myself feel better because I wanted to sell more, but is that I think when you're working on a project for a group of people in need, you're constantly thinking about those people, and it's if you have any sense of you know, the non-material world, I think it's a little bit like you're in a constant prayer for that group of people. And so I believe that you're actually doing more than just the material good when you put your nose to the grindstone, or in my case, you put someone else's nose to the grindstone. And so I just want to encourage you that even if it turns out to be just a couple $100, I think it's still worth the effort. And I also think, I'm going to put words in your mouth, Benita, that it's maybe nice to know that there are people besides you that care about the cause that are trying at least to make something happen and to help the cause as well. So I also wanted to add that for a while I thought this is just not going to work because various things weren't happening, and it got a little tricky with trying to find an online place to market this, because obviously you can't just sell at craft booths all the time. So, but I was just about to give up, and I think one thing that I kept in mind from a friend was that the world is not short of ideas, it's short of action. It's so short of action. And so to just be able to get over those humps during whatever project you're working on to actually make something happen and deliver, that's really what you need to do, is have some kind of source within you that can get to the finish point and have something to show for your effort. Because there's always a little bit of trickiness in any kind of project. And I think one of those sources is gratitude. The fact that we have resources available to us to even do a project of our choosing, and the freedom to do that is so amazing to think that we have all of that, and some people have just none of that freedom. And so to continue to go back to that gratitude is one thing that helped me carry out the project and get it to at least a milestone point. So I think that's all I wanted. I keep having one more thing. The power of video. I know a lot of people are getting really good at video. That's what stirred in me this whole project. And that was because Rosemary had gone over to New Beginnings and just took, you know, her camcorder or whatever and did interviews with different girls and asked them what the Home of New Beginnings meant to them. And these girls were, I mean, they sold me. They were just like, this is the best place I have, you know, this is a home for me, this is a family, since I had no hope before, and now I get up each morning and I have hope, and saying all these things, as well as an interview with Benita that made me realize there is real work, real change, real redemption being done in this home, and I'm going to do anything I can to help. So the power of video can, you know, a picture speaks 1,000 words and a video speaks millions probably. So I would encourage using video in whatever effort you're going to embark on. All right, thanks.
That brings you a little bit of a list. Let me refer to I made a mistake on our handout here. Under Treasure, Children of Grace, that's Tara's organization's. It's really .info, my mistake, .info. I knew that and still didn't change it. My fingers type in the same place, I guess. So there's that. I want to also call your attention to Ride for Refuge. We've talked a lot this afternoon about art or about gardening or jewelry in these two cases. Ride for Refuge is an organization that really started out of Canada, and they're looking for cities to do these rides for and to raise support for any of. There's probably 120 organizations on their website. They raised over $1 million last year in these rides, and you get a team together and support an organization that's listed there.
Mm-hmm. Are they bike rides?
They are bike rides, yeah. So we have a couple of athletic things that we've talked about. I have another friend who spent an hour throwing baskets and got sponsors to pay for every basket he made. Well, he's really good. So those sponsors were, well, they didn't know what they were getting into, but he raised over $1,000 for another organization as well. And it's one event, it's quick, it's over, and there's it for those of us on the ground. I just can't tell you how encouraging it is for us who are working with the girls and working closer to their stories. Their stories are really difficult, and they're difficult to hear, and they're difficult to be in and know that this behavior is based on the fact that she was raped for 3 months by an awful man, or whatever that story is. There's something, as Erin talked a little bit about, that is incredibly encouraging to those of us who are closer to the girls themselves, to know that we're not having to think about fundraising. Oh yeah, and by the way, after you talk about your rape, I'm going to go call somebody about fundraising. And it's a disconnect for me. I struggle with it, and it is not something. I just encourage you that 2 cents, 10 cents, 10,000, whatever it is that you can do to support an organization. I was interested to know that even Polaris this morning, 30% of their budget is also, they have to raise. 70% of it is covered by the government, but 30% they have to raise. So for any organization that is working in this way, fundraising is to lift some of that burden is enormous. So that's the Treasure piece. Frocks for Freedom is another group of people, not for beginnings, but because because I'm on the ground, I'm hearing from other people what other people are doing. This was a gal who worked at a mall, actually, and she went from store to store and asked for those clothes that they were going to send back or send to Ross's or whoever they send them to when they're done. I don't know where they send them. And she asked if they could just write a donation, write it off as a donation instead. And she gathered stuff from every store in the mall and then had an enormous garage sale type, she called it Frocks for Freedom. And it worked. They made, I think, $8,000 or $9,000 just on a one weekend sort of event. Another friend of mine works with transgenders in Thailand. And by the way, let me talk a little bit about partnerships. Don't do anything alone. Do it with somebody and do it with understanding who else is out there. It's too hard by yourself. It's hard emotionally. A lot of people say when you go to the bars, is that safe for you? And it's physically just as safe as I am walking across this campus physically. Emotionally, it's not safe. You stay in, do research in this area and think about it and get exposed. And the more you get exposed, it's emotionally very difficult. So don't forget that piece, okay? And do this with somebody that that you have support with. We partner with Soul Project in. Did I talk about that? Okay. We partner with Soul Project. Not at all.
Yeah.
Oh, just to you. Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry. I also partner with a group in Bangkok that works, a gal who works with transgenders. The transgender population is enormous in Thailand, partly because the surgery is so simple and cheap. And there's a myriad of reasons. I won't go into that. But when we go to the bars, there are transgenders in the bars as well as the straight, the girls that we work with. So we spin off each other when I'm talking to a transgender and there's an indication that they'd like to leave the industry, then I get their number and send it off to her and vice versa. But her community did an enormous, her mother's in a big neighborhood with a big homeowners association, and she got the whole group together and they did a community-wide garage sale and donated all of the funds to her organization. So there's a myriad of things you can do. Ideas are easy. Action is harder. So let's talk about that a little bit. Look at step five. Just do it. And just do it doesn't mean just go out and begin a nonprofit without some research. There are little things to do, and little doesn't mean unimportant. It just means things that don't take as much time. Take small steps, and then reflect on your own time, your own plan, your own ideas, your own circle of influence. And as Aaron talked about, it's not just you. Who do you know that's a jewelry designer? Who do you know that has a talent in another area? You're networking as well. How do I think I'm being led? Do your research. What gifts and talents do you have? And please don't be modest about those. If you're good at throwing baskets, then use it. If you can ride a bike and that's what you love to do, contact Ride for Refuge. See if you can start a Ride for Refuge in your area. And that's a time-consuming undertaking, I have no doubt. Run for Their Lives, the same with Freedom 424. But throwing baskets and getting sponsors for that will probably not take you very long. It's not a huge time commitment. Start with small steps, but start. Take some action. Who's in my area of influence? Who can I partner with in my list of friends? Please partner. Don't be a lone ranger in this. Who do I know that has a particular gift or talent that might be enlisted? And what does my time really allow? a lot of times after a conference like this, you're gung-ho to go do something, and I've got to do this and this and this, but you've got three kids, and they're in soccer and tennis and swimming, and you're working full-time. It's not realistic for you to jump both feet into something that has much more of a time commitment than you have. Be realistic. Step back from the emotion of it. That's probably the hardest thing to do. There's a lot of emotion around this, and there needs to be emotion. There needs to be passion. But when it comes to your action, just do this and get realistic about what it is that you can do. But do something. Do something. Even if it's read a book, do something. Then I guess I want to say something about, this is always difficult to talk about. When you're talking about the sex industry or women who've been exploited sexually, there's something titillating about it. There's something very sensual about it. And there are some people who should not be involved in that piece of the anti-trafficking arena. One of the ways we partner with the SOLD Project, when they bring teams through, we talk to their teams. SOLD Project is about prevention, and they're up in Chiang Rai about prevention. And they come to Bangkok first, and I meet with their team all day. We talk about what happens to these girls if you don't prevent, if you don't do what they're doing, this is where they end up. And it's been a great partnership that way. Then some of the girls that fall through their prevention cracks, we can follow up with in Bangkok. I have yet to talk to one of their teams or any other team that came through where someone, usually female, though I've had one male as well, was not triggered by the whole discussion of sexual exploitation. Know your history. Know your recovery. If you have some exploitation in your background, it does not mean that you can't get involved. It just means that this is emotionally difficult. And it is also emotionally difficult if you have no experience in your background. I will swear to that. I can't go to the bars more than two nights a week, and I don't have any abuse in my background. It's too much. I get into a fetal position. I get under the covers, and I just think this is too much. I can't do it. Know your limits. Know yourself. And know your motivation. It's not a place for you to recover from your own background. Tara, do you want to talk a little bit about that at all?
Okay. I just briefly, we only have, I think, a minute or so.
But, oh, we do? I think
we have more time? Okay.
15 minutes, I think.
All right. So I'm sorry. Thank you so much for the gentleman in the yellow. My experience, my background that Bonita is sharing about, which I gave her permission to share about, I have recovered from my own abuse as a child, being abused by my father. And this was something that I did not know was even a connection, except for the fact that when I went in and started getting involved in seeing some of this taking place, and it was causing a lot of, ooh, what's going on inside? Through this, I did step back. And so my process of research took a couple years and some therapy. And going through that and saying, okay, what's going on? What's mine and what isn't? And so thankfully, God has actually done a ton of healing in my life and allowed that to be redeemed and actually restored. So now I feel it's just a great thing, a place to be, on that side and saying, I really can help give back in this way. And my heart goes out to the girls in a deeper, more personal way, not having been trafficked, but having been, abused. And so, anyway, but had I gone in on the early part of all that and not known anything about my past, it could have really even been much more traumatic. So that's what she was sharing about, just knowing your own, where you're at in your life and just being aware of those things.
So know yourself and know your limitations. Be realistic about what you're able to do. Be sensitive. Know your motivations. I've actually had some people get involved that were recovery is not a good motivation to get involved in this, and that inner something that says, I'm afraid to do this, but I'm going to conquer my fear and get in there, could be okay, and it could be not a good thing. If you're there for the purpose of your own conquering, then it's not a good motivation. There are others who get involved because there's something titillating and sensual about telling the stories when they get back home. So examine yourself, examine your motivations, be teachable, please be teachable. I it's a mantra for me, be teachable, because these girls have a lot to teach you. They have a lot to teach you about yourself and about your spiritual journey and about who you are and who they are. Their stories are significant, and I tell them over and over again, just as Tara has mentioned, their story is going to be important. God's going to use their story for someone else's healing as well. Know your story and where you are in that story. Be teachable and be humble. Do you have any questions at this point? We've got about five more minutes.
Mm-hmm.